Blog Talk Radio.
Hockey Guys Podcast. Yours truly, Hunter Crowther, co-host Christian, and apologies for our lateness. Unfortunately, some of us have lives. Chris, how you doing today, man?
Pretty good, and I'm pumped. That yesterday got me into the playoffs, and it was probably one of the best playoff days I've watched. I mean, that Montreal-Ottawa game was amazing. Chicago-Nashville was even better. I am so excited for this playoff season, and it started off great.
Yeah, it really was something.
The first night of the NHL playoffs kicked off last night. There was four games in action. Relatively exciting for the most part. Habs Sens went 4-3. We'll be talking more about each game as the show goes on. The Islanders and Caps. Kind of a dud on Washington's part. Isles went 4-1. An empty netter. Hawks Preds seemed to be the game of the night. Went to double overtime. The Predators were up 3-0, and then the Hawks came back to tie it. And then Duncan Keith scored the OT winner in double overtime to take it. Big win on the road for the Hawks. And then Vancouver Calgary, which I didn't see much of. I was more focused on Hawks Preds, but it seemed to be pretty exciting. And the Flames steal it with 30 seconds left. Chris Russell scores to win it. That's another big win on the road for it was a big night for the road team last night. Chris, what stood out for you last night?
Well, it matters on each series. There's something so crazy that happened. Start off with Montreal-Ottawa. I mean, that was so physical. So many storylines in the first day. You know what? I don't know where to start. We can start with PK. We can start with Hammond. We can start with the goal scoring in the second period. It was an amazing game, and it was, as being a fan on one of those teams, it was probably one of the best games I've watched in the last couple of years.
It was really exciting. The shots were 39-33 for Montreal. I thought both goalies played a relatively strong game. I thought the third period was really exciting, too, and it seemed like both teams were scrambling. The big question I think that faced Montreal throughout, faced Montreal heading into the postseason was how much scoring they could get, and it seemed like with Pacioretty out, their lack of depth might hurt them, but it seemed like all their scoring came from depth last night. Mitchell, Eller, Flynn, Plekanec. You know, I remember too when Montreal acquired Mitchell and Flynn at the trade deadline, I was a little critical of those moves, but in their, you know, roles, they've contributed in many ways, and especially last night, all the players too. Montreal was positive in possession. The big thing also was the slash, and let's get to the slash right now. PK Subban slashed Mark Stone. There was a lot of talk about what happened and what the consequence should be. PK got 5 in a game. The league said they will not suspend him. David Cameron had some comments afterwards. Chris, your thoughts on the slash and what the process should be now?
Well, I mean, it was a penalty. There's no doubt. I mean, it was a slash. But it's the playoffs. So you're going to eject a player for taking a slash. Yeah, it was a hard slash. But there are much harder slashes that aren't even called. So I didn't agree with the call. With him being ejected, the rule, I think it was Rule 61, it says if a player is slashed and injured on the play, the player who does that is supposed to be kicked out of the game. So I guess the referees followed the rules. But you know what? Stone came back. I know he's injured right now, and this wrist injury he has. He came back. He'll be back for the playoffs. I don't agree with the call. I don't know if you saw PK's reaction. It was kind of trending all over Vine and the Twitter. It was pretty remarkable how pissed off he was. But I do not agree with the call. I think it was just the refs ruining a game in a way. Luckily, actually, when Montreal is...
I think you have to be... No, I thought it was a pretty bad slash. I mean, even if the actual impact wasn't that bad, that's a follow-through, man. And as much as I understand what you're saying in the sense that it is the playoffs, and I think we'd all be ignorant if we said the refs didn't put away their whistles a little bit in the postseason, but that's a hard hack on Subban's behalf. If anything, I thought the play was, if not completely similar, but it had shades of Bufflin's suspension earlier this season, where you're just careless with your stick, you're not aware of the situation, and it ends up hurting your team. Now, should he have gotten suspended or not? I don't know. I don't think so. I think if you kick a guy out of a very meaningful playoff game, that's a pretty harsh punishment to begin with. But overall, that's a dirty play on Subban's behalf. And I understand it's playoff hockey and guys are going to do stuff. And I'm sure the Sens are going to do something in game two to get back at him. But
Chris Neal.
The other thing too. Yeah, Chris Neal, exactly. My last point, and then you can finish it off, and then we'll move on to Isles Caps. My last point is Cameron said that his team would do something if the league didn't, and he seemed pretty hot and pissed last night. But, like, is he not aware that Twitter and the entire hockey blogosphere is listening to those comments and picking them apart, and he's hurting his own team? While I understand what he's trying to do, saying that the league should punish this player. But if anything now, the refs are going to be looking for your guys to do something stupid. And now you've put your team in a position where, even if it's not a retaliation slash, if they're just whacking someone in front of the net, the ref's more inclined to blow the whistle.
Exactly. And it also is a little bit of a message to the players saying, someone step up. Like, you're going to let one of our best players in Stone get injured? Someone step up. It's a rookie coach mistake. And I listened to that live, and right when I heard that, I was like, oh, my God, what is this guy saying? He ruined the chance of PK getting suspended. I mean, PK was not going to get suspended for that, but if there was a chance, he ruined it because he put an ultimatum against the NHL. I don't know.
And the NHL... Go ahead.
I was just going to end it here. I don't know what he was thinking. The PR staff just needed him to chill out a little bit longer because he was really expressing some crazy views on that game. And we were talking, I mean, I was listening to Montreal radio before that, and they were talking about, like, oh, it won't be like Terry and McLean 2 years ago, how they're all going after each other. They're more calm now. And he came in and he did not, I mean, this series is going to be a rivalry, and it's coming alive. That first game was so physical. It ended with a brawl. It's going to be one hell of a series. I'll let you finish it off there.
My last point is, if he's going to say that, like, that emotional reaction that he showed at the end in that press conference, that tells me that Stone's injury is worse than it appears. And while, yeah, he did come back in the game, and I think they ruled that it was a fracture, it certainly appeared that he was not happy with the results of an x-ray, and he just let his emotions get the better of him. And it happened. Our guest today is Ryan Wilson. You may know him on Twitter at Gunnar Stahl. He writes for Hockey Buzz, and he'll be joining us in a few minutes. We'll recap more of last night's games, and then we'll have Ryan on. Last night, the Islanders defeated the Washington Capitals 4-1 in Washington. When I was watching this game and then rewatched some of the highlights, it seemed like the Islanders had control for not only most of the game, but they dominated the first period. They dominated in possession. I thought Jaroslav Halak had a brilliant game, if you minus the one miscue on the Johansson goal. It just seemed like Washington couldn't get any offensive chances. They got a few shots. They had some opportunities, but they weren't able to sustain anything. And actually, I'm just going to have some quick thoughts on this. My last thought is big on the Islanders for taking game one. And I've this theme of road teams stealing one of the first two games in the series. If you can take one of the first two games in the series, you've split it. And now you've put yourself in a position where all you got to do is just win your home games. And so kudos to the Islanders. They had a heck of a game. Game two for that one will be on Friday. I'm excited for that series. That was the one series that I said would go to seven. And even though I have the Caps winning the Cup, I still think those two teams are going to battle it out. Chris?
Yeah, personally, I think that might have been the best things the Caps could have faced. It was more of a wake-up call. This team has been inconsistent in the playoffs since this group's been together. Yes, they have a new coach. So maybe this is a wake-up call. You know, next game they'll come out there And they'll take advantage of the Islanders' injury with Hamonic, who is probably one of their best defensemen. So, it's a, like you said, it's going to be a crazy series. It's going to be very close. But, yeah, I was just flickering through the through that game when there's commercials on with Montreal and Ottawa, but it looked like the pace was pretty fast, but the Islanders were pretty much dominating that game.
The Chicago Blackhawks defeated the Nashville Predators last night 4-3. It was a notable win because the Nashville Predators were up 3-0 after the first period. And, Chris, what did I tell you last episode? Corey Crawford, man, he just chokes. He just doesn't show up. Yeah, he won a cup, or he's won two cups. It doesn't matter. But he was pulled after the first period. Scott Darling came in and was more than adequate, 42 saves, had some spectacular stops in overtime. I don't expect him to get the starting game, too. I still think it'll be Crawford. But now Joel Quenneville's in a position where if he thinks Crawford's going to struggle and not bring what he can or not provide the team with adequate goaltending, there I don't think he'll have any hesitation to grab Darling and put him in the starting role.
No, and we've seen Quenneville like Darling a lot. I mean, Ranta lost his job pretty much to Darling. And Darling is really stepping up. He's kind of just turning into a household name. Crawford, you know what? He was brutal last night, but the team was brutal in front of him. It was more of a wake-up call. That's why.
No, you're right. That Crawford. First period was awful for Chicago. That was an awful first period.
So it was more of a message like, all right, let's get him in here. Darling in here, and now the next game they'll put Crawford in, and hopefully the team will respond in front of them. If not, then we have a goalie controversy, and it looks like Darling will take advantage of it. But if I'm Crawford, you have to be solid in that game. I mean, you have to come in there open-minded and ready to stop every shot coming towards you.
I thought the Predators played a relatively good game. I mean, they outshot him 54-42. They were right with him the entire time. They were getting tons of chances in overtime. It seemed like the Predators just wanted to end it right away. But they weren't able to hold on. You can't fault Nashville for losing to a Chicago team, which is pretty much made on being perfect. I mean, you look at Chicago's second, third, and fourth goals. Sharp, Toews, Keith. And Patrick Gang gets two assists on two of those goals. I mean, they really are a team that when they're struggling or they're not getting the results they want, they can just turn it on a dime like it's nothing and just go, oh, yeah, we're the Chicago Blackhawks. We've done this before. It's no big deal. Come in, and they took it in double overtime for a game that could have gone either way, and I think that Nashville's going to come back and take game two, but it was a heck of a game one. The last game we're going to look at before we have our guest Ryan Wilson on is the Vancouver Canucks and Calgary Flames. Now, the Flames won 2-1, and I didn't see much of this game. Like I said, I was focused more on Hawks Preds, but my timeline was blowing up. It seemed like everyone was excited from play to play, whistle to whistle. The Flames took it with 30 seconds left on a Chris Russell goal. Chris, did you get any of the highlights? Did you see the game?
Yeah, I saw most of it. I mean, it wasn't much of a physical battle. It was more of the speed, and that Calgary first line is just amazing. I mean, they dominated, and it doesn't look like they ever get tired. That's going to be a series to watch, and I was surprised. I thought Vancouver would get that win, and I really did think Vancouver will win this series. But watch out for Calgary. They're proving us wrong. They're all proving us wrong, and it's a great story.
It is a great story, and I think that the one acquisition that Calgary made that I think some people forget was Jonas Hiller. And as much as some people have questioned Hiller's ability, I still think he's a legitimate starting goalie in the NHL, but he has been great for Calgary this year. And if you watch last night's game or saw the highlights, he was making some spectacular saves. He's doing a good job of neutralizing Vancouver's opportunities. I think he's a big part of their success. And I'm interested to see how that series plays out. I've got Vancouver taking it, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Flames grab it. Now, joining us on the line is a man who writes for Hockey Buzz covering the Pittsburgh Penguins. His Twitter handle is the bad guy from Mighty Ducks 2. And overall, he seems like a pretty cool guy. Ryan Wilson, what's up, man? How's it going?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. Thanks for coming on. So, Ryan, my first question for you, I always love awkward silences. My first question for you is, you wrote a piece today on how certain Pittsburgh Penguins do against the New York Rangers over a four-year window. And the results that you came up with were that Evgeny Malkin is very good against Mark Stahl and Dan Girardi. Sidney Crosby is very good against McDonough and Girardi. Brendan Sutter is not a shutdown center. What other interesting tidbits did you find out while you were doing your research?
Well, you're going to come to find that Crosby and Malkin are going to do damage against most of anybody that they play against. But since they're really the only two lines that Penguins can trust and rely on, I just wanted to see if there was any advantage of how you could maximize their potential to have success against the Rangers. And with Crosby, if you can get him against that McDonough-Girardi pairing, and I do think Dan Girardi being the obvious weak link there, it'll get him away from Mark Stahl, who we all know took some liberties on him last year in the playoffs, the famous cross checks to the back of his neck. And with Malkin clicking at around 65% possession against Mark Stahl, I just think, especially when they're on home ice, that that's some things that they can take advantage of.
Hey, Ryan, Chris here. So I was wondering, you know, New York Rangers, they're the best team in the NHL right now, and they're playing a depleted Pittsburgh Penguins team. What are the Penguins' chances of actually beating the New York Rangers? And is there a chance, actually, that they could beat them, and who has to step up?
I do think the series is going to be a little bit closer than some people think. I was looking at the numbers over the past 20, 25 games. Rangers possession has fallen off a cliff. It's actually below average for the past month, which was a little bit surprising to me. They're being carried by, go figure, Henrik Lundqvist, and a shooting percentage that's pretty high right now. On the flip side, you got the Penguins. They actually have some pretty great possession numbers, but they have almost a league-worst shooting percentage since March 1st. So the Penguins being in disarray is a little bit misleading. But the big thing is Chris Letang being out. How much of him missing affects their possession? We haven't really had a large sample size without Letang to kind of know for sure. I'm just going to go and say it's going to have a negative connotation or impact on it. We just don't know how much yet.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, the big question that always surrounds the Pittsburgh Penguins seems to be Marc-Andre Fleury. And while he had a respectable season this year, 920 save percentage, he did struggle at times towards the end. And an interesting thing I read, except for last season, he hasn't had a save percentage in the playoffs over 900. Is there any legitimacy to the idea of Marc-Andre Fleury being a playoff choker? Is this just something where because the playoffs have such a small sample size, we're not able to judge it properly? Or is it legitimate that Marc-Andre Fleury is a guy who struggles in the postseason?
I think in some circumstances, especially with goaltenders, you need a large sample size to make conclusions. But I think this has been something since even 08, 09 when they won it all. He had slightly below average numbers during their cup run, which were he had isolated moments of greatness for sure. Everybody remembers the diving Lidstrom save in the waning seconds, but you said it. He has had an average to above average season this year, but his playoff history has not been kind to him. Even last year when people said he had a bounce back year, in the Rangers series, five of those games he did not have a save percentage above 900. The other two were shutouts. So he runs very hot and cold. And I'm not sure you want a goalie that runs really hot and cold if you're a contending playoff team. I think you'd rather take warm most of the time with a higher floor and a lower ceiling, but that's not what Marc-Andre Fleury gives you.
Ryan, the Pittsburgh Penguins have been known for not having good temper, especially when they play the Philadelphia Flyers. New York's not known for hitting and being an aggressive, hard-hitting team like that, but their speed, they're full speedy players. So what can Steve Downey do with this series? He's had a so-so season this year, and he's gotten a lot of heat from people outside of the organization for just playing the dirty way. Is he going to have an impact on this series at all, or is he going to, if the best thing for this team is if he doesn't have an impact?
This is a really great question, because I do actually respect his hockey ability. He's done some okay things. He's got really nice hands down close near the net, some soft hands. He scored some nice goals. I think some of the penalties he's taken this year have been solely because of the nameplate on the back of his jersey. I don't think he is ever going to get the benefit of the doubt. Emotionally, I don't know what he's going to do, I guess. The hope for Penguins fans will be continue to play solid bottom six hockey and don't be a nutcase, but I don't think that's a guarantee.
Chris, you stole my Steve Downey question, so thanks a lot. But my one point on Downey that I thought, like you said, he's always had talent. I mean, like, there's always been a level of skill there. And like you said, when it comes to his emotions, I think he's always had a tough time handling them. But I think Ryan hit the nail on the head when it comes to his nameplate. And I think that when there's a scrum, the stripes are going to grab him. When there's some player down, he's going to be the one who's accused. If there's an injury, it's Downey who's going to get who won't get the benefit of the doubt. But I'm interested to see in this postseason if Downey can actually contribute more than just being a fourth line guy, or if he can be someone who can vamp his game up in the playoffs and find that balance between dirty and playoff hockey that so many referees give players the benefit of the doubt. Ryan, another question from me. How has Daniel Winnick done since being traded from the Leafs to the Penguins? A lot was made over Winnick's season in Toronto. He seemed to be one of the few bright spots. And the Leafs got a significant, or at least a half-decent return for him. How has he been in Pittsburgh?
Personally, he's one of the guys. I think I would rank him at the top of my list for them to target, to keep for free agency. I know they brought him in to help the bottom six, and when he was playing in that role with Brandon Sutter, he's the first guy in like two or three years that actually got Sutter above the 50% barrier for possession. So that's pretty good. But the injuries and whatnot, and for whatever reason, he's now on the Crosby line. When Sid gets the puck down low in the offensive zone, Winnick is a nice supporting role of contributing on the cycle, winning some board battles, but I'm not sure that's exactly the role where you want him to play. He's not drowning in that role, but he's been good. I think he's been a good addition for them.
Ryan, as a Habs fan, I am just hoping the Pittsburgh Penguins can surprise everyone and knock out the New York Rangers, because it only strengthens their chance of maybe getting far in the playoffs. What's the update with Christian Ehrhoff and Derek Pouliot? I mean, those are two pretty key pieces to that defensive group, considering it's an injury-riddled defensive group. Will they be back for the series?
I think they may both be back for game two. That's what I'm kind of hearing from some of the beat writers. Ehrhoff's been skating a good while now. His is obviously a concussion. We don't know what the ailment of Pouliot is. I don't think they ever released it, just the classic upper body, I believe. But Ehrhoff is kind of the wild card in all this. They desperately need him. He's a legitimate top four defenseman. In my article today that you pointed out, the matchups, he's the only Penguins D-man that has a large enough sample size where Rick Nash isn't owning him. Paul Martin doesn't do a terrific job on Nash. So having him back, Rick Nash has had an excellent season. I do not think he's going to have the shooting percentage woes that kind of made everybody think he was a bad player last postseason. So, yeah, getting Ehrhoff back, and Pouliot for that matter, even though he's a rookie, not tons of NHL, but he has that raw skill. I mean, in October, you have a Penguins defense corps that could run out Martin Letang, Mata Ehrhoff, Dupre Scuderi, and then today, or for game one, it's going to be Martin Lovejoy, Cole, Scuderi, Chorney, Dumoulin. Drop off.
Oh, my goodness. Ryan, this is my last question, and thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate having you on today. Brandon Sutter, a lot was made about him when the Penguins acquired him. The Penguins gave up what a lot of people would say is a franchise center in Jordan Staal, and he's had his struggles in Carolina. But Sutter seems to have – now he's slotted in the third-line center role. Will he ever be a top-six caliber player like a lot of people pegged him to be when they made that deal? Or is he is what he is? Is he just a third-line guy who with the help of some more inclined offensive line mates, can put up at least some decent production?
I don't think very highly of Sutter's play since coming over from that trade. I don't think he'll ever be a top six guy, and I think he's a borderline third line guy, to be quite honest. His possession numbers are usually in the mid-40s, depending on his line mates, so that whole he's a defensive shutdown center, that's a myth. He's not very good at generating offense on his own. What he does do well is he's a good skater, and when he is in time and space, he has a really great snapshot. I'm sure you've all seen when he comes down the wing, snipes at high blockers. Sometimes they're shorthanded. When he's in time and space, he's okay, but the problem in the NHL is there's not a lot of time and space to go around, and if you can't create it for yourself, what are you going to be able to do out there? And I think his role on the team, the elevated role they hand him, has actually been one of the reasons they've come up short in recent years.
That'll be interesting to see. Quickly, right before we let you go, prediction for the series. Who do you think is going to take it?
I did my little write-up for Hockey Prospectus. I'm not going to go against what I said. So I have Rangers in seven, and I have it in seven because of the big differences in possession for those teams the last 20 games. But you know, Henrik Lundqvist scares the bejesus out of me, even with Crosby and Malkin. He's the best at his craft. And, you know, the Rangers, all year long, they have the results that speak for themselves. So Pittsburgh, certainly an underdog. Am I counting them totally out? No, obviously not by picking the Rangers in seven, but it'll be fun to see.
Ryan, thanks for coming on. We appreciate having you. You can follow Ryan at Gunnerstall on Twitter. Ryan, again, thank you for coming on. We got about a minute left on the show. Chris, we got four games tonight: Pittsburgh, New York, Detroit, Tampa, Minnesota, St. Louis, Anaheim, Winnipeg. Which game are you most excited for? And remember, we got about 40 seconds left.
Winnipeg, Anaheim, best series coming up. I'm pumped. Let's get ready, boys. Playoff season has started, and it's hit us.
Couldn't agree more. I'm very excited for that. I'm going to be staying up late, 10:30 o'clock Eastern start time. Make sure you watch it. This has been the Hockey Guys Podcast. My name is Hunter Crowther. You can follow me at Hunter Crowther. You can follow Chris Shannon at ChrisShannon16. Sorry about the late start today, folks. We'll try to get back on track for Monday. Man, some good hockey last night, and we got more good hockey waiting for us tonight. So go to thehockeyguys.net to listen to the show. You can download us on iTunes, subscribe, all that crap. Yeah.